sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Quantitative easing forever. Markets rally and bonds drop. Consumer confidence does a surprise to the upside. And we have a guest, Anthony Chung from Rand Squawk. You got to hear a little bit about this. This is something cool and you'd want to pay attention to, something that will probably help your trading and understand a little bit more about what's happening in markets in real time. We got this and lots more on episode number 280 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Stand by. Here we go. Well, welcome, Andrew Horowitz here, and it is episode number 280. We are at the 16th of September, 2012. Happy New Year. Happy Rosh Hashanah to all of our listeners who are celebrating the Holy Week. This week, starting in the Jewish tradition, starts on sundown on Sunday and then moves into the next couple of days for Rosh Hashanah, the New Year. Happy times. Then we have what's called Yom Kippur, where we have to fast for a day and give up all of our sins. Kind of, we do it once a day, where once a year, when some other religions do it maybe once a week or whatever. So I guess we got off kind of lucky in that regard. Anyway, listen, we have, we got a lot of things on the table, because if you think about what's going on lately, we have this massive amount of stimulus, bailouts, whatever you want to call it exactly, that is happening on a global basis. You start out with saying, well, where are we talking about? Well, we got Europe. Europe clearly has been doing a lot of bailouts behind the scenes, recapitalization of banks, all sorts of talking. There, if you've noticed, one of the biggest differences in what we've seen lately in Europe is that the talk, ever since Angela Merkel put the gag order on everyone just to talk about, well, not to talk about the negatives, which means then just talk about the positives, has driven confidence a bit higher. So you can see how easily investors are swayed when people of high powers talk. I mean, just think about every time Bernanke comes even near the opportunity to get in front of a television or a radio, whatever it may be, markets react pretty dramatically. And because the job of the central banker is really, if you think about it for a second, it's really the ultimate cheerleader for the economy. Now, here's what I found really interesting, a couple of things of interest on what happened last week in terms of the stimulus, the rhetoric, and markets. So follow me on this. You know, obviously we know that, well, let's get into this. First of all, one of the big things that we had to come over, the hurdle that was really one of the few left right now in the next couple of weeks when it comes to how markets can react and sentiment, was whether or not the German High Court was going to approve the payments to the various bailout funds in the EU. Now, they've been talking and squawking and being all pissy about, no, we're not going to put any more money, and we don't think this is constitutional. We don't think what Merkel did was good. You have to get congressional vote, blah, 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 blah. Well, meanwhile, lots of talk, lots of people, you know, ruffling feathers. And then in the end, they said, oh, it's approved. No problem. You didn't break any laws and you can go along with this. And I don't think I even saw any significant amount of back end talk where they would usually say, but don't do it again. But you don't have the power to do this. But if you're going to do this, you'll need, you know, full congressional support and we'll have to check constitutionality. That didn't happen. So really what happened was they gave the blessing to the continuation of various bailouts in Europe. Now, of course, we saw that the rumor and maybe some fact came that Spain was looking to see maybe they'll go and find out what are the conditions for the bailout for additional money by the ECB, because they're getting kind of close to needing some funds. The problem is that nobody wants to actually ask, because that's the only way you can get money. That's the only way you can get the bailout funds. That's the only way you can get them to buy your bonds, is by actually asking, you know, please, daddy, please. They don't want to do that because there's a stigma attached to that. Now, what's interesting is, again, I think the Europeans have it kind of ass backwards a little bit, because what's happened is over time, when the bailouts have come, when the recapitalizations have been put in place, when funds have been made available, they actually are received pretty well. As the countries postpone the inevitable, which everybody else sees, even though they're saying we don't need a bailout. Remember what happened last time? Spain said, under no conditions do we need a bailout. Under no conditions are our banks being a problem. 2 weeks later, they said, you know what? We need about $100 billion. So I'm not sure what is the, you know, if they're working, worried about a daily move. I don't know what is their thinking over there. But already the Spanish gent who took over is, you know, he took over 6 months ago. I would say about 6 months ago. And promised that there's going to be more jobs and there's going to be less cuts and there's going to be all this. Already he's in the doghouse. Because what happened is the president of Spain has said that, you know, he was going to create less austerity, he's going to reduce taxes and create jobs. And already, as he came in, he had to break all of those immediately. I guess when he finally saw what was actually happening with the books of Spain, he said, you know what, maybe there's something quite wrong here. Maybe there's something that we need to look at, because the facts are that we are in big trouble. Our banks are relatively insolvent. Nobody wants to buy our debt. Money market funds around the world and other investors are pulling their money out of our bonds and out of our banks. So what's happened is that they're kind, you know, this whole jawboning is an act, just an act. It's a deceptive act, but it's an act. And what they're doing now is looking again, and I wouldn't be surprised very shortly if Spain gets another injection, and the discussion about Greece getting additional money has come up again. These rumors just don't crop up out of nowhere. They need a third bailout. The Troika was there, and they were discussing things. And lo and behold, once again, they're getting more time to get their act in order. Greece has been given more time to get things going because they do not have the funds to pay their bonds at this point still. They do not have the funds to keep the government running. So bottom line to all this is this. Let me give you the kind of clear bottom line to all this. Don't believe anything you hear out of Europe. They are doing what they have to do to save their lives. And when they do that, and when any country or anybody does something like that, there is apt to be a good amount of deception, misdirection, and outright lies. And I'm not afraid to say that. And by the way, I don't have any reservation at saying that, in general, the European central banks are absolute liars. Now, that doesn't mean we don't want to invest there. That doesn't mean that there's not good opportunity. I'm just telling you facts. So don't listen to the things that they're talking about, because they're going to have to go through a money printing. And by the way, since the July discussion of the ECB, when they came out and they said, hey, you know what, we're going to do everything and anything to make sure this all stands, they really haven't done anything. And that's okay, because their words have carried a lot of weight. And their promise, with unlimited money backing them due to the opportunity to print money and to grab from other countries, is solid enough right now until we see them make a big mistake, and then people are going to get, you know, aggravated again. And they'll come out again and say a few things. Now, with that in mind, equities of Europe, and I'm talking about the southern part of Europe, have done very well. The DAX has done great this year, the German index. Bonds, amazingly, have come down. Since that July meeting, have come down. The yield differential between the German Bund and the bonds of Spain and Portugal and Italy and even Greece have come down dramatically. The yields have really, really come in, and that means prices went up. If anybody had the cojones to actually invest in any of those bonds, thinking that they possibly could get a haircut on this, but for a trade, boy, you did well. If there's emerging markets and there's European bond funds out there, mutual funds, some ETFs, I mean, you should see how these have reacted. It's been quite amazing. It's been very much a remarkable change in sentiment. Probably that's why you've seen that the University of Michigan sentiment went to 79 for the preliminary. And that was above expectations of maybe 74, 75, and last month's about 74. So consumers have a little bit more faith here in what's going on that's going to help out their future, and they see a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel and possibly spend more. Now, let's talk about two other things that have happened. We saw that China came out with about $150 billion infrastructure expenditures that will be targeted at railroads and highways and subways. And you saw the major reaction with copper. We'll keep gold and silver aside for a second because that was something different. But copper, steel, material stocks have really, concrete stocks, have really risen pretty nicely on the hope that they would get some of that business. Now, I don't know how much China is going to use external sources for some of that they could do either there or through Asia. So we need to be careful on what we're investing in right now. But I gave you a list of stocks last week that if you look at them from last week till now, they have done amazingly. I think the only stock that came back a bit, I believe was AK Steel, which that was the kind of my last on my list, if you remember. They came out with earnings that were just horrendous. These stocks will come out with horrible earnings, by the way, because if you think about it, they haven't gotten any of the stimulus input yet. They haven't gotten any of the orders that have come to full fruition to get the spending going. China may be doing this. We don't know exactly at what pace, where they're buying from, so you have to be very careful. As a matter of fact, if you look at Cliffs Natural Resources, CLF, that stock has gone up dramatically over the last couple of weeks. With the potential for stimulus in the U.S., with the reality, at least the discussed reality of stimulus out of China, and with the ECB doing what they can to back things, the dollar moving down about 8.5% against the euro and some other currencies over the last 3 weeks, you saw this company do very well. Now, it's at a point that's an inflection point right here. There's, as we would call it, a fast zone that it's kind of in, but there is a level of stop overhead resistance, not a lot, but enough that if there's any question about where there's going to be opportunity, Cliffs could be in trouble. Cliffs can come back and people could be taking their profits and that would fall down a good 10% rather quickly. Again, it's a little bit of a questionable thing. We added a very small position Friday at the high and probably made about 1.5-2% as the markets came in on Friday. But any drop in the markets, any kind of a consolidation from this point, I'm not saying correction, I'm just saying consolidation from an extremely overbought situation. The markets are overheating on every single indicator we have. As a matter of fact, our key reversal indicator, which I tweeted and I posted last week on the Discipline Investor website, on Friday at about 11 o'clock, it pinned. It pinned out. In other words, think of a speedometer for a second, right? You can be at zero on the left. You're not going anywhere or whatever. And you can go to the right all the way. And if you can't go any faster, it pins. RPMs pin. Well, we pinned out the key reversal indicator, meaning that over the next, let's call it, I'll give you just a short period of time, 3-4 days, there should be a reversal in this market to get it back into equilibrium. Now, because it's so sharp on the upside, because we saw this, and of course, a lot of that fueled by QE, which I'm going to talk about here because I want you to understand it a little bit more. What's happened is that we see the potential for whatever drops may happen, whatever drawdowns may happen, there's going to be some buying because a lot of people want in on this because they see this rally continuing with the support and safety net of the Fed. So whatever drawdown we see, I think what's going to happen is you may see a few days of a drawdown, some stocks coming in a little bit. There'll be some sectors that outperform, of course, as they do, particularly, maybe some financials, maybe some of the housing stocks will continue to outperform. But a lot of these have to come in because stocks don't, trees don't grow to the sky. You can't just keep going up straight in line because earnings are going to play a big part of this, and earnings season is right around the corner. So what I'm saying to you is that when we look at this key reversal indicator, we look at it as a potential move in a market during a trend. So what happens is if you get a trend that, let's say, is moving down, markets are moving down, and then they all of a sudden take a real sharp move down towards a point of exhaustion where just everybody's throwing in their hat and saying, forget it, capitulating and just throwing out, everything. You're going to see the key reversal indicator pinning to the left all the way on the oversold area. Now, that's a much better indicator, by the way, because oftentimes on an oversold, you'll see mutual funds or hedge funds, or you'll see individuals starting to nibble at stocks at that point when it gets to that level, and it will start bringing it back up to equilibrium. But right now, the stock market in the U.S. is out of equilibrium. So what do you do about that? Well, for a number of days, about 2-3 days, starting on Friday afternoon, we're going to put on some inverse ETFs. We have a VIX option, a call. We have the 20 for October that is in the portfolio. And by the way, the VIX ended up last week higher than where it started. It did hit a low about 1350. It was as high as about 1650 at one point on Tuesday or so. And then on Friday, interestingly enough, it climbed. It climbed 8.5% from the low on Friday. This is when everybody came in, of course, after the big rally on Thursday. They came in on Friday, and there was still a lot of buying that had to be done, a lot of cleanup. But then we saw the University of Michigan number, and again, it popped the markets up. I think the S&P was up somewhere about 17 points at one point. And it closed up, I don't know, about 5. So there was a pretty big drawdown on the markets, and that would be, you know, the sign of a, we'll call it a false rally for the day. We'll call it a distribution concept for a day because we saw good volume. But again, if you think about it, even though the markets were up, there was distribution going on from the top where people said, you know what, this valuation level right here is not appropriate. I'm not telling you that I say that. I'm telling you what the markets say. You have to listen to the market, listen to the kind of the beat of the drum. Now, I think that the QE, by the way, which is a purchase of up to, I guess, $40 or $50 billion of mortgage-backed securities over the next however long it takes the economy to get better, and then sometime, as Bernanke said, Bernanke just threw in pretty much the ultimate. The only thing that he could do at this point more, in my opinion, except for just hand out money to everybody, is to lower the rate paid to banks on reserves left at the Fed. I thought that was going to be a much better way to go, because while the purchasing of mortgage bonds will lower down mortgage interest rates, and by the way, go out and figure out shortly, maybe a couple of weeks from now, what the differential is on your mortgage rate. This will hurt banks, by the way, even though spreads are going to come up a little bit because people are already selling the long side of the bond. So what happened, the bond market really didn't like this plan. The Treasury bond market. The long end sold off pretty well. Yields are rising. Which, by the way, I think is something positive. I think if yields rise a little bit, that people will think about, hey, wait a minute, maybe the credit that I was going to get here or the rate I was going to pay there is going to move up. Maybe I better lock in something, grab some money, and do something with it. If we see inflation starting, which we did see inflation numbers last week. We saw PPI and CPI, and they were hot in terms of the core. I mean, not the core, the full number. 1.7 on PPI came in on a year-over-year basis, and that was a lot higher than expected. And if we do see inflation start to pick up, I think that's actually a good thing. Now, it's not good for you and I because we don't want to pay more, but you know what's good about it is it gets people off their duffs and saying, you know what, maybe I should go out and I should buy something. Because prices are going to go up. And if prices go up, wow, it's going to be more expensive than it is today. So let me stock up, kind of like what China does. China bought tons, millions of tons of commodities towards the bottom. They knew that, you know what, I got a good price here. I better get it fast before things turn around because things do go in cycles. Please don't think that the inflation is going to stay low forever. With the amount of money that's being pumped in by not only the Fed, but by the European region and by the by Asia, there is going to be inflation. And we see what happened in the emerging economies. The reason we didn't have inflation here was because most of the money that was used and that was pumped in was actually pumped into a giant black hole that filled up the emptiness that was made in the balance sheets of the banks. So it didn't make its way right into the economy. That's why it didn't work. I'm still not quite sure how Fed Chief Bernanke and the gang think that buying mortgage-backed securities is going to help the unemployment situation, other than the fact that if it does help housing because rates will be lower on mortgages, and if people feel compelled to do so, go out and buy a house, maybe that's going to help the construction. But already we saw that manufacturing is slowing down. We saw the inventories rise on Friday. Sales to inventory ratio is rising. Factories are slowing down because sales aren't there and because the retailers are being very conservative into year end. They've learned how to manage their inventories a lot better. So when we look at the fact that we have all of this easing going on, easy money, and by the way, I think that the Fed, my opinion, I think the Fed sort of, they should have left their powder dry on some of this. They should have been able to do a smaller amount, not an open-ended QE, not moving the interest rates out to, you know, keeping them zero through 2015, because in my opinion, I think that was a little bit too early considering where the economy is. We saw some better numbers on some. We saw worse on others. But the economy is still not, unless there's something that's behind the scenes that we don't know, that maybe the ECRI does know, who said that the recession in the U.S. started in June, even though their own numbers and their own statistics don't bear that out at this point. They are making a clear call that the recession in the U.S., a recession in the U.S., started in June. Not that correlates to the time when we saw the manufacturing numbers dip below 50, of course. So we have 3 months of negative growth or contraction in the manufacturing numbers. So maybe that was something that had to do with it. Maybe there was some of the numbers that aren't looking as good, and with the last employment numbers, et cetera. Right now, markets are flying high on the hopes of continued stimulus and obviously inflationary impact and Fed being there. And everybody's like, well, who cares at this point? The Fed's just going to keep on pumping money into the markets. But listen, let's be clear about something. Let's all face a little bit of reality here for a second, okay? Just for a moment. Earnings season is around the corner. And when these companies don't meet the expectations this quarter, because none of this is kicked in, of course, what's going to happen? I would dare say you'll see a number of stocks that miss drop pretty hard. Now, is there a cushion? Is there a safety net? Well, yeah, because you have the Bernanke put right now on, so maybe there'll be some kind of a cushion. If it drops, people will buy in. A lot more liquidity in the markets. But how long can that go on before there's a bubble forming? So be very careful with your stock picking right now. One of the things that we've done for our portfolio is when we saw stocks sell off, Liquidity Services sold off last week on just a note from a third-tier analyst. And I read it and I looked at it and I said, this is bogus. It was down close to 10% one day. This is a stock that we had probably a 30% run on in the last 3 or 4 months. And actually what we did is we took a little bit off the table prior to this. We took a little bit of the profits out, brought it down to an underweight, but still weighted well in our portfolios. We added to it when we saw it basing that day because the note was very unclear. And the fact is there was no material difference in what we saw liquidity systems doing. So what happened is it's LQDT, by the way. So when we bought that, what happened was, lo and behold, the next day they come out with a new contract from the Department of Energy. I think it was DOE. They came out with a new contract where they're going to be selling more of their surplus goods for a longer period of time, et cetera. The stock rebounded about 7% in about a day. So be careful. Price is what pays, of course, but look at what's driving price. Baidu last week, a stock that we don't hold, had 3 or 4 different rumors that were flying around all at the same time. One of the rumors was that the CFO or CEO was stepping down. But then that came back and looked at, well, that was old news and that had really nothing to do with them. There was just a change of positioning and a way of restructuring, and that wasn't happening. Stock moves back up. New note. Yep, it looks like he's stepping down. Stock drops. Then nobody cares because who knows what the rumor mill is doing now, and the stock moves back up. We see this with rumors that are coming out with companies buying other companies. Look what happened with Monster Worldwide, MWW. There was a big push because, again, we've seen this before with this company. Again, we're seeing that there's a rumor that they're going to be possibly bought out, which would make sense for maybe a Google or somebody to kind of fold in an employment search firm, an employment-based website. Now, one of the things that we're going to have to watch, and I think is going to be the biggest issue before we get to our guest, is going to be the whole idea of the unrest in the MENA countries, the Middle East, North America, North Africa. Because food prices are moving up again. Corn is kind of close to a record. Soybeans hit a record last week. Wheat. Gas prices are going up. WTI oil crude hit $100 on Friday before it backed off a little bit. Natural gas had a 15% run last week. Amazing. We actually shorted into it the prior week. We closed the position for about a 6% gain. Opened a small position at the beginning of the week. Closed it at the end of the week for about probably no loss, no gain because the way when we bought it. The fact was that their natural gas inventories came in above expectations, which means there was a lot of liquidity. There was a lot of excess in there and there was a lot less usage. But still, a 15% run on natural gas in 1 week for only the reason of possibly the QE, possibly a lower dollar, possibly, you know, something. Was kind of a little bit of absurd, by the way. So I'd keep a watch on that. The problem, though, is that when you short natural gas, there's a couple of different ways to do it. You can actually do it with options, maybe, but you could do it in the futures market, or you could do it in simply shorting UNG, the ETF. The problem with the shorting of ETF UNG is that sometimes the shares are hard to borrow. The last two times we actually came and shorted that, we were able to get shares, but about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, we get an alert that says that there may be an automatic buy-in because they had a hard time locating the shares. I don't like automatic buy-ins. First of all, that means that they can buy in potentially at any given time to cover the position that they didn't have to begin with. So technically, in a weird way, without my knowledge, we were naked short UNG, right? Naked shorts are not a good thing for the markets. Second thing, if they actually are doing that, that means that there's a lot of shorts outstanding. They're cleaning up the short shares and the potential for a rally moving forward is there because if you can't reshort into it and they close your shares, there's nothing you could do but just buy in. Therefore, there's only buyers. Does that make sense? You're not going to have the other side. You can have sellers, but not shorters. So you have an uneven balance between the longs and the short potentials. So therefore, if they're going to do a buy-in, it can happen in mass, and that drives shares up because they do it not in in any way that would benefit you. They just boom, buy in at their time of their choice because they just want to cover the position. So just to keep a look at that, we have some earnings next week coming up. We have Oracle, Adobe, Jefferies. FedEx is going to report, but they already had a very poor pre-announcement. Of course, FedEx kind of moved higher after that because everybody's just, you know, hey, let's just buy stocks and doesn't matter what their earnings are. We have international economic data coming next week. China European manufacturers are due out Wednesday and Thursday. India and Japan will also have an interest rate decision, which is going to be interesting. And there's a big question whether or not Moody's will be downgrading Spain. We saw that Egan Jones downgraded the U.S. debt from a AA to a AA- last week, and nobody cared. Egan Jones is kind of, unfortunately, they're a third-tier ratings firm. So now we're going to have a pretty busy week for Fed speakers, obviously. They're going to come out, and we're going to have all the guys talking this week and, you know, all the discussion of, oh, no, I disagreed with this. Oh, no, I agreed with this. More stimulus, not stimulus, whatever. But we have to watch the economic data. We're going to have the Philly Fed survey coming out, Empire Fed survey. We're going to get also, interestingly enough, we're going to get home sales, housing starts, building permits, and the NAHB survey are all due out next week towards the end of the week. So keep an eye on that. Now, we got lots to talk about. I want to talk about the iPhone 5. I want to talk about what an actual Squawk box is, Squawk service is. I want to talk about Europe and all that. So let's get right to our guest. So our guest that we talked about is Anthony Chung, and he's the head of market analysis from RandSquawk. Now, you may or may not have heard of RandSquawk before. We've actually gone back and know them for probably the last couple of years because we use them as one of the sources to get information on markets, on economics, news that's going on a little bit faster than you would, let's even say, by watching some of the TV shows. So, Anthony, I thought we'd start and talk about the old line, what the old squawk box was, right? You know what I'm saying? And how it evolved into some of the things you're doing, and then talk about some of the markets.
Yeah, sure. No problem. First of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the chance to speak with you guys.
Great.
Going taking a look then at what a squawk box is, because it may be a term that most people are familiar with, but some might not be. So originally, when we, in the old days and many years ago, before the inception of Rand Squawk, we used to work at a bank on a desk whereby we were on the floor with 100 traders trading the futures market. We'd be looking at, we'd have our analyst desk to sort of paint a picture in your mind's eye. We'd have a desk in the middle of that floor. So as you can imagine, it's pretty busy, it's pretty frenetic, there's a lot of noise going on. Our job was to watch all of the markets and, more importantly, watch the news as well as the scheduled economic releases that were coming out through the day. And what we'd do is, if something important was happening, then we'd grab the microphone and we'd be shouting out as and when things are happening in real time. We were kind of like the alert system for traders, so that they could concentrate on what they were doing, and we would have our team, number of analysts. I mean, at Rand Squawk, we have 15 analysts. They're constantly looking at blog sites, social media feeds, as well as all of your major financial news wires. But a lot of it comes from sort of contacts in the market, other analysts, economists, journalists at major newspapers. And what we do is we try to scour all of this information, something which you couldn't do as an individual, because if you were trading, you just wouldn't have time or the capacity to do it. So we kind of take the legwork out of it, and then anything important that we see or we think could be potentially market moving, then we would announce it over the audio or the squawk box, so to speak.
Yeah, so now the difference has been that no longer are you just shouting it out to the people that you're trading with on your trading floor, and no longer do you have a mic. Well, I don't know what it looks like now, but no longer do you have the old-fashioned microphone or even screaming probably in the beginning. It's kind of through the magic of internet, it just comes right over your computer speakers. You know, so if you sign up for a service with a Rand Squawk, and there's a few services like this, but there's two different levels, which I think is so cool, because in the old days, like I said, you know, kind of the evolution was you would just hear all of a sudden out of nowhere, you know, jobless claims 335 or something like that, you know? Mm. Now you see not only that, but you get a little bit of the news feed behind it.
Sure. I mean, that's really what we want to do, is that we don't want to be just an alert service. It's not just a one-hit economic release or one-hit comment, particularly with the situation in Europe at the moment. You have to put a lot of these comments that come out in context. You know, if we're following a European summit and there's 50-odd top-level officials speaking at any one time, a lot of it is reiteration of what has already been said, but what our skill is and what our job is our experience is that we follow these markets day in, day out, and we're open 24 hours now, so we constantly got guys manning the desk, and the key is really is sifting through all of the noise, if you like, because even now, through the advent of better technology and particularly on the social media side, is that there is so much information there, and what we want to do is give you the color, if you like, so you can, you know, we can make a judgment call then of what is important and what's not. And we want to deliver just the stuff that's going to be market moving that you can utilize either to use to make a trade or use to, you know, protect yourself and maybe take out a position and so on.
So basically you have a gigantic, for Europe now I'm talking about, for the European leaders and some, you have a gigantic bullshit filter.
you could term it that. There is a lot of to-ing and fro-ing Believe me, when there is a European summit, it is a bit of a headache because they do like to talk, and it goes on for a couple of days. And yeah, I mean, the main thing is that the problem you have is that you've got to be very careful when these comments are coming out, because it can only take one comment from someone like Chancellor Merkel, someone who actually has some force and some weight and can actually make a decision that will change, you know, be a bit of a game changer. So you just got to understand as an analyst, as a trader as well, is when to pick and choose your timings and who and what.
And I think probably more important, if I may, wouldn't you say also that the change of their comment compared to where they were? So for example, you know, you have, you know, with Juncker, and he says the same thing all the time, right? He's all pissed off about everything and he's this, and then, but then he was happy about that. And then you have Merkel who's like, no, we're not doing that. No, we're not doing that. Right. But then you had, in the old days, you had Sarkozy, like, hey, let's spend money. And now we have Hollande. Say, you know what? You know, we're going to do this also. And Greece is, you know, always saying, can we have more time? I mean, this is kind of like the game, right? So
yeah.
I think the important thing would be, I would think, is if you saw a change in the verbiage. For example, when Merkel said, okay, we'll go along with the bond, well, not the bond buying, but yeah, the recent bond buying. That was a big change of comment, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is the thing, though, that whether you're watching news-wise, one of the other things as well is that they're talking in various different languages is when you've got to be quite difficult as well. For some of these Bloomberg and Reuters, when they're translating a lot of these comments, so many times, because I watch the market minute by minute, I see Merkel make a comment, or I think there was one comment last week when I think it was Greece. The IMF said Greece is going to request a third bailout.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the market shot up, and it was like the bond future shot up, the 10-year shot up. It was like kind of like, it's like multiple billion-dollar bailout is going to be coming Greece's way, probably because they haven't fulfilled the conditions and the Troika visit, even though they've only just arrived in Athens. But then all of a sudden they come out and they deny it, and they go, well, that's not the case. And then the IMF come out, well, that's not quite right. But these are things you have to be very careful for. But no, as you said, Merkel, that was a real kind of game changer. But a lot of these situations that we got to at the moment has a sense of inevitability about it. I mean, the yields in Spain have dropped considerably since the OMT announced from Draghi and the plans that they have. But the problem is now it's the game of the politicians who really are being somewhat problematic, so to speak, at the moment. Rajoy, the Spanish Prime Minister, saying that there's no urgent need to request a bailout.
Well, he said that very much. He said that once before, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of, now that the yield has fallen so sharply since the ECB have made that recent announcement in their press conference, the fiscal situation in Spain has not changed. The unemployment rate is ridiculously high, 22-23% levels. There's not many places in the world that have that kind of high level of unemployment. So even though, with this, a lot of this is kind of, as I said, a sense of inevitability. At some point or another, the market will get tired and will force the hand and think, right, they haven't requested a bailout. The yield will start to creep up. The auctions will become in focus again. They'll become difficult. And, then once Spain gets bailed out, then where do you go from there is the question.
Right, exactly. So when you look at all of the information that flows through, I think one of the funniest things that I've seen lately, and you've been at this game a while, is that when I read a Bloomberg story, which I love Bloomberg, a Reuters story and all that, it inevitably ends with some comment like, and that is reason why there is more bets being made that stimulus will happen. Or this,
right.
What happened to the world when we were able to live off of stimulus? Is that just not existent anymore?
In terms of living off of stimulus, I think that the problems are far more deep-rooted in a lot of these European nations. The schedule, if you like, or the numbers seem to be constantly changing. And I think that makes the targeting any type of stimulus a lot more difficult. And I think going forward, the numbers seem to be just stacking up upon themselves in all these different countries.
And what about in China? Every time there's a negative print, they could talk for every time there's a negative print, there's stimulus. Every time. Print.
Every time I hear a bad number from China, every morning I come in the European session, there's rumors of rate cut, rumors of a triple R cut. Does that happen?
It's ridiculous.
Hasn't so far, but...
Well, they did that one stimulus thing. But let me switch gears on you for a second, because I know you want to talk a little bit about the iPhone. The iPhone 5 came out last week with the announcement, and a little bit bigger screen, a little bit better processor, same price, same thing. iOS 6 is going to be available for all, I guess, up from 4S and the 5 now. And I am being skeptical about this, but and I have a 4S, by the way. I'm pretty happy with my 4S. I didn't see this. Wow. Did I miss something with the 5?
I think you're right. I think it did lack a bit of the wow factor. But I think that when anything Apple releases, there's so much anticipation, there's so much build-up, and it's so transparent in the press, particularly with this last release, what exactly was going to happen. There was nothing to really wow left in the tank.
Right.
I mean, we pretty much knew exactly what was coming out before the announcement. It doesn't have that Steve Jobs kind of wow factor. When you watch the conference live, it just doesn't have it anymore, in my opinion. But is that a right thing, a wrong thing? Then, I mean, the market really dictates the price action. But, yeah, it did lack a bit of wow. But, I mean, for us, one of the good things is obviously the speed of the phone is going to get quicker. And, you know, we've got our application, our RAMSCORE app that we've released, which is free to download on the Apple App Store. So, you know, we hope that as 4G comes into play and that people are going to use those, you know, time, they want real-time updates in there, they can utilize that app by all means.
Mm. So let me kind of switch gears again to some of the things that are happening in the area of oil. I mean, you know, it's interesting because markets recently over the last, let's say, two months or so, it kind of didn't matter the bad news, that there was always some kind of underlying, I'm talking about U.S. markets, even to a point European, but U.S. markets, you got to remind me to ask you about the U.K. about something there, but U.S. market, there's always this hand underneath it that, you know, maybe there's a lot of money on the sideline, maybe there was hedge funds looking to catch up, maybe, I don't know what it was, but there was this continual buying of equities, and on the news that was announced, and then on the restatement or the news again, every time the same exact news was announced, the equities would go up. What's the story with that?
Yeah, it's kind of like the market is just on steroids at the moment, and it doesn't, whatever the news, however negative it is, then you know, we're operating an EFSF ESM program of €700 billion in Europe, you know, to bail out these nations, and the euro is trading up at 130-150, and stocks are up at their highs. What can be could be underlying on that? I think maybe a degree of short covering. I think a bit of a squeeze higher. I mean, what could it take to just sort of pop the bubble, so to speak? I don't think it could take much. I think the with the U.S. elections coming up very shortly, I think it will be very interesting, because I think with the market theme, it tends to be able to only focus on one really subject matter at a time. And we've been so Euro-focused
right.
at the moment.
Right.
That everyone's kind of forgot that the fiscal cliff and the sovereign rating. We had Egan Jones downgrade the U.S. on the Friday, I think it was.
Yep.
And, you know, Egan Jones is not one of the three majors, but, you know, all three of those major rating agencies have the U.S. on a negative outlook. And I think what will happen is that when we get closer toward that election day in November, things will start to take a bit of a turn towards that. And I think this whole, the sovereignty of the U.S. will become a bit more of a major theme, and that will definitely put some nerves into the market.
What's interesting is that if the U.S. comes out with a stimulus package or things are good, the dollar goes down, right? Usually.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, well, you know, it's printing money and all that. If Europe was to come out with some kind of program, I don't even understand how this happened. The euro goes up. What is that? Is that just we've forgotten the whole point of the weakness of a currency is directly related to the economy that is backing it, and the we'll say, you know, when they do a stimulus package and when they do quantitative easing, it's nothing more than when a stock comes out and does a secondary offering, right? In terms of the currency. Right? Would you agree with me with that?
Yep.
Okay, so you know, you have all this going on, and you have this ESFF, and you have the LTRO, and you have the blah, 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 and the euro goes up. It's like insane.
I think with the European situation, it's more of a case of what could happen potentially is that if you don't have a stimulus, you don't have the money going to these economies that have been bailed out, like Greece, Spain, and so on, or Portugal, Ireland. Is that if the euro was to collapse, i.e. the ideology of the euro, if someone was to exit the euro, I think that is such the network of money transactions that go through, the bills that go through on a daily basis, between these countries, if that was to come apart, that would be a catastrophe, I think, for the market. And I think that what will happen is that these politicians and the ECB and all the powers that will be in Germany, they will do whatever it takes, as they have said explicitly in those words themselves, to continue to support the economy. Now, you could argue that this is really only going one way. If they continue to throw money at a situation, then there's going to come a point where, you know, much like the US in the debt ceiling, you know, we've got to hit some sort of limit at some point. But I think at the moment, the market seems to be just trading on the fact that Europe will do what is necessary and continue to throw money at this problem, and that will continue as long as it will take. Because the result that would come from a failure, that if someone was to exit or the euro was to just finish in its existence, would be so catastrophic,
right,
not just for Europe, but for the entire market,
mm-hmm,
that I don't think it's even just a euro problem, i.e. Europe saving it. The US will have to help. China will have to help. You know, you get Merkel going on her trips to China, sort of going, if you like, pleading on one knee just to get them to continue to invest in Europe. You know, this is a real issue for the global economy right across the board.
Listen, I think that China's a big part of holding up the euro as well. It's good for them because,
yeah,
if they hold up the euro, then the Europeans can buy the goods from China. And we've already seen the hit that China has taken on, the exports were 1% when we expected 7%. We see industrial production coming down. You know, we're seeing GDP prints estimates come down to, 7.5 from 8.5 recently. So, I mean, China is, you know, or used to be, at least, it should be a major powerhouse just from the sheer number of people that are there and the consumption.
It's incredible as well. It's incredible as well with the people talk about hard landing and China's, you're right, a lot of the investment banks have been downgrading their growth estimates for China to around that 7.5% kind of area from 8.5%. You know, this is economy that's growing at 7.5%. It's incredible when people are talking about the end of kind of this booming economy.
Right.
And you've got all these European nations printing large quarterly contractions quarter after quarter after quarter. I always find that quite amazing just from the taking yourself out of the situation.
It is. Now, let me switch over to your country where you are located over in the UK, right? And ask a question. So you have a AAA sovereign rating, right?
Yes.
I don't think you're on negative watch anywhere, are you?
No, I don't believe so, no.
What is it that these guys like about you so much compared to the U.S.? I'm not suggesting the U.S. should be in any different circumstance, but you have a debt problem, you have a really big unemployment problem, your housing market is falling in certain areas pretty sharply, or it has been, and on top of it, you have you have quantitative easing that keeps going on, and they don't seem to even flinch at potentially, you know, putting a little finger on you guys.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think all of those points that you touched upon, in my opinion, would at least constitute some kind of negative outlook, particularly with the headwinds coming out of Europe. As I said before, I think a lot of the market focus tends to be so zoned in on Europe, and it jumps from one thing to another. It always seems to just, the UK seems to evade that spotlight so often, because I think there are inherent risks there, and there are a lot of things that you could say I think it was France who got downgraded, and the French were very quick to point the finger at the UK,
right,
and say that, look, actually, the UK is even worse than we are.
Right.
You know, why aren't you doing anything? But historically, going back over the decades, the UK has a reputation of being very good at dealing with fiscal problems very quickly, better than most other nations. And I think that's something which the major rating agencies do take under consideration, is that we do tend to, the UK government and the Bank of England, they're very proactive in terms of embarking on these measures, like the funding for lending scheme that's going on at the moment, the banking of the saving of the Lloyds and RBS a few years ago when that first started. Yeah, the UK was the first to market with a lot of these concepts that then got followed and echoed across various other markets as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that tends to keep us out of the spotlight.
So let's kind of just segue over for a moment to earnings. One of the things that we've seen is that stocks have been a lot of short squeezes that I see, by the way. A lot of short squeezes through areas that were just, you know, collapse. Look at the Kohl's and a few of those, I mean, the last few days. But There's a discussion, as there has been almost every quarter over the last two or three quarters, that earnings are not going to be as good as expected. And we've already seen revenues in the U.S. kind of flat. We've seen retail sales okay. I mean, a 1% retail sales print does not excite me, by the way. You know, we've seen some numbers that are better in the housing market. But again, if you look at a housing market, new housing starts, it's still crawling along the bottom. Meanwhile, the stocks of these companies are really way up. And a lot of that has to do with their ability to cut costs and a better inventory management and all the good things that we know about. What is kind of like your take on next quarter's earnings, with the fact that we've had this gigantic run up, not based on earnings now, just based on kind of quantitative easing, stimulus, things are a little bit better in Europe than they were. I mean, is there potentially some concern about next quarter?
With earnings season, I mean, I'm not a stock specialist, but it's something that obviously I follow for the broader market. But with that, I mean, every earnings season, pretty much, I always wonder, I look at it and I think to myself, now, even as you said, the revenues are starting to look not quite as strong as they used to be, but and yet stocks continue to climb.
Yeah.
And I don't really see that trend changing. I see the numbers not being as stellar as they have been. I don't think they're going to drop off a cliff by any means, but I think the market will just continue to take it in its stride very much so.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be any real sudden change. I mean, some of the data points that have come out of the UK, out of the US, apart from the disappointing jobs data that we've seen, haven't been particularly that bad. And with the further stimulus, the further easing measures that the Fed are embarking on, I don't really see that changing on the corporate landscape.
Mm-hmm.
I think that will help and assist and underpin, if anything, continue that trend.
Yeah. So now, as far as London is concerned, you watched the Olympics?
Yes, I went to the Paralympics. I saw Oscar Pistorius break the 400 record.
Wow, that was unbelievable, huh?
Yeah, that was. I mean, he broke it by 4.5 seconds, I think.
Mm.
That was. He absolutely smashed it.
I'm going to try to figure out what kind of guy I'm talking to here. What was your favorite sport in the Olympics?
My favorite sport?
Yeah.
Like anyone else, I hate to be a cliche, but it's got to be the sprint event.
Oh.
At the 100 meters, the 200 meters. I've been reading Michael Johnson's book, actually, the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I would really love to have seen, I really want to see Usain Bolt against Michael Johnson, the 400 meters.
Was Bolt amazing or what? I'm sorry to say, but on this side of the pond, we all like the women's volleyball. Sorry. You know what I'm saying? We have our own reason.
Oh, yeah. Now, Swedish team against the U.S. team is always a...
my favorite in the Summer Olympics, in the Winter Olympics, I have a lot of favorites, but I don't know what it is, but we all got into curling here.
Really?
It's the weirdest, boringest, but fantastic sport. I mean, I live in Florida, so we don't have a lot of ice here and all that, but that curling, I mean, it's just so precision, the sliding and all that. But anyway, we'll see. I mean, I heard that golf is coming to the next Summer Olympics.
Golf is coming?
That's what I heard.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I know. That's what I heard.
That will be basically the Ryder Cup take two.
Exactly.
The U.S. against Europe. And
exactly.
Who can come out trumps.
Exactly. All right, so let's just kind of sum it up here and mention that I know that you have a free delayed product for the desktop, right?
Yeah that's correct. So we have... We have a professional version, which is kind of the top-tiered one, if you like. That includes audio in real time, so you get all those alerts. Again, we're going 24 hours as well, so we'll be covering the Asia-Pac session as well as full UK, Europe, and US. And then we cover, just for any of the other listeners who aren't aware, we cover all the different asset classes, so from bonds, stocks, FX, commodities. The second sort of level is what we call our light package, which is much more geared towards those who aren't full-time professional traders. So it's a lot more competitively priced to fit that. But what it means is that you have a slightly delayed audio feed, but you get real-time text alerts on our webpage. We have like a scrolling headline feed, much in the same vein as you'll get on the Financial Wire.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the retail version, which is the third version, which is basically free. But then you're getting 5 minutes delayed on both the audio and the headline. So you wouldn't really be able to utilize what we're best at, which is our speed.
Yeah, and then for trading, but you can at least have a flavor for it. But I do encourage everybody to check it out because it's really neat. And, you know, during the day when you're doing your thing, oftentimes, let me just say it, when you watch some of the financial television, they color it with all sorts of silver linings. This is the way that it goes. But if you want kind of the straight, like what the professionals use, where you can make, you know, heads or tails of what's really going on and the real information out there, this is the kind of thing that we use. We have a couple of these kind of things also in the Squawk, but we also have Brand Squawk as well. But this is something that I think you should check out. We'll put a link on the show notes, and hopefully you'll check that out. I think it's great. Anthony, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And I just want to, as well, I know you touched upon it earlier, but the app as well on the Apple Store.
Ah,
I mean,
yes.
That's free for you guys to download. It's absolutely free. You know, I'd love you to check that out.
What is, how do you spell the Ransquawk for them so they are clear on this?
Yeah, it's R-A-N for November, S-Q-U-A-W-K, so Ransquawk, one word.
Right, Ransquawk.
And if you search that on the Apple Store, and you should be able to find it. You can have it for your phone or your iPad.
Great, awesome. Thanks so much.
Brilliant.
Have a good day.
All
cheers,
right.
My friend.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye. Nice chap, wasn't he? Anthony did give us some good information regarding, I think, what's happening and the rhetoric in Europe. And you have to pay attention to that and maybe step back a little bit. Maybe but the thing to do is to listen to the news, watch the news, and then step back from it a little bit and maybe don't react so fast until you find, well, maybe if there is another announcement that will come out to clarify, or maybe even just don't pay attention. And maybe it's just all about, as Brian Shannon would say, it's price that pays. The only thing that pays is price. I do want to mention that I would be looking at Tom McClellan's information. He has talked about the potential for a quick, maybe brief snapback, and that's what we talked about with the key reversal indicator, which I put on the website last week, that we are seeing a very, very overheated situation right now. And while there is the underlying QE that is out there, maybe it is time to consider maybe hedging out a little bit, whether it's through the VIX, whether it's through an inverse ETF, just for a couple of days. Something to ponder, something to think about. And then, obviously, we have some of those earnings that are coming out that will be really interesting to watch this week. I want to thank you for joining me. By the way, if you want to reach me, just write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And also, if you've been sitting on the sidelines for some time and you're kind of like thinking, oh, what do I do at this point? Well, you know what? Take a look at the 14 or 12-minute, whatever the exact time is, little tutorial we have, the virtual tour for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. And if you want any more information about our global allocations, you can find that you can just put that information in as well, and we'll send you off all sorts of information on how we manage money and what we can do for you. And if you take that step, we'll be glad to provide you anything that you do, in fact, need. Next week, we have an author coming on, David Wessel. That was actually, he was actually recommended to us by a listener. If you have anybody that you want us to have on, in, you know, specifically, well, please do me a favor, drop me a line. I'll be on Frank Curzio's show this week, or next week, I guess I should say. And I want to again thank you for joining me today. And we'll be around next week. And we're going to have DH Unplugged this week as well. So have a profitable week. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.